Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Josh Slocum. He's the host of the new podcast, Disaffected, which examines the role of abuse dynamics in society and politics. He believes that the personality disorders behind domestic and family abuse are becoming normalized on the American left and have put us all in a relationship of domestic abuse with social justice activism. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
And thank you.
And so let's start by saying we would both be broadly categorized as like old school lefties. We're not reactionaries who are just sort of hating on the left.
Right.
And now something, so often I hear old school lefties say something has gone terribly wrong with the left. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And I don't have a word that I can give people when they want to peg me down politically. I'm not a liberal anymore. I don't think I'm a leftist. I'm not a conservative. I'm not a libertarian. Maybe the closest thing I'd be willing to say is classical liberal in the UK sense. But I think that these names that we give ourselves, these categories, are misleading because they contain a whole bucket full of smuggled assumptions. It's a package deal, right? So if you say you're a liberal, you have to believe not only in X, but also in Y and Z. And the same thing for, the other side of the spectrum. But yes, I have spent, I spent most of my adult life being a strongly partisan Democrat, and definitely a leftist. And for a very long time, one of the people that I now say have gone too far, you know, what you might call a social justice warrior. And I do think that something has gone very, very seriously wrong with the left. I think the left is detached from reality, material, physical reality. I think the left has mistaken. I think the left is making so many mistakes and has forgotten the real meanings behind things like equality, justice, fairness. Certainly fairness under the law. I mean, I look around now and I'm horrified. I'm horrified at the number of people who claim to be on the left who are agitating against free speech, against constitutional protections, and they're in the media. The entire mainstream media has been captured by this ideology.
Just last night, I saw an article in Tablet about mainstream media people who are in favor of censorship. The headline was "Journalists Mobilize Against Free Speech." Subhead: "A new generation of media crusaders clamors for government control over what you see, hear, read, and for banning their competition." And the people they, and this is sort of an old school lefty magazine. This is not, you know, the right calling this. And they were citing journalists for the New York Times, Washington Post. They were citing mainstream lefty journalists.
Oh, and they're not wrong. We all see it. It's right there. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, when people get angry at you for saying that, you know, the left has a problem with free speech, the left has a problem with recognizing reality, they get very angry about this. And I sit there and I say, can you not see the headline that I can see? Are you not reading the same article from the New York Times that I'm reading? Because if this upsets you, I understand it upsets me too. But you're angry at me because it's easier to be angry with me than it is to allow yourself to fully absorb the truth that the left and the mainstream media are in fact as far gone as I say they are. And some part of you knows it. This anger comes from fear, I think, Derek. And I understand that fear because I didn't used to think this way. As people who have known me for a while will know, I had something that I called an awakening 5 years ago. Very, very briefly, if people want more information on this, they can listen to my podcast. I had, at 41 years old, I brought my mother back into my life after not having lived with her or near her since I was 12 years old. And I was trying to rescue her from homelessness. I bought a second house. I went into debt to rehab, and a two-unit ranch so that I could give her a rent-controlled apartment and pay the bills by renting out the second apartment at market rate. And it was a terrible, terrible mistake. And within 2 years, I remembered everything that I had pushed out of my mind since I was 12 years old about my mother's insane and irrational emotions, her abusive behavior, her lying, her emotional manipulation, her cruelty, her sadism, her willingness to exploit her children, her family, and anyone else around her for short-term gain. And I ended up on the very cusp of a nervous breakdown. I was trying to decide whether to kill myself or check myself into a psychiatric hospital. And if that sounds melodramatic, I realize it sounds melodramatic, but my mother has what's called a cluster B personality disorder. I believe that my mother has borderline and narcissistic personality disorders, very toxic combination. This awakening came when I realized that there was a name and an intellectual framework and an explanation for my mother's behavior. And that was something I was never able to put my finger on before. I mean, I had the type of upbringing where I did not invite friends to come over to my house because I was ashamed and I was scared for people outside the house to see my mother as she really was. And like many children who are abused, many spouses who are abused, you make excuses and you lie and you say, oh, you know, my husband is really, really sensitive and he's very traumatized. And you just have to understand that. And, you know, and all of that was true, right? I mean, you know, my mother's derangement did not come out of nowhere. I mean, she came from a terribly abusive background herself, but she's a wicked, wicked person. And she was actually out to get me. I mean, it wasn't just that she wanted to exploit me. When I didn't jump to her tune, she threatened to file reports with Adult Protective Services to have me tagged as an elder abuser. She and her husband sent me threatening emails saying that they were going to blacken my reputation. They were going to finally pull my mask off and show the world that I was not, in fact, this generous person who worked for a nonprofit consumer protection organization, but that I was a wicked narcissist. And a mother abuser. I mean, it was absolute derangement. And when I discovered that there was a psychiatric category called cluster B personality disorders, it all made sense to me. And for those who have not heard of them, believe me, you have had these people in your life. You may not have ever heard the term cluster B before, but you know these people. It's your abusive father. It's your abusive husband. It's the boss at work who lies about you and gives you a bad performance review based on nothing. It's your best friend who has spent her entire life being needy and clingy and telling you how much she loves you, but how much she needs you every day. And as soon as you don't run the errand that she wants you to run, she's smearing your reputation in you know, unrelated Facebook groups. These people, personality disorders are a kind of mental illness that is not like other mental illnesses. There's not the same sympathy factor, at least there shouldn't be. This is not like depression or anxiety or even schizophrenia. These people are not disconnected from reality wholly. They're not hallucinating. They know right from wrong. It is what it says on the box. These are personality disorders. Something is wrong with who they are. It's not like depression that comes and goes. It's not like a crippling anxiety that might come over, you know, an otherwise normal and stable person's life and change the way they act. This is who these people are. And they very rarely change. And I had to both come to terms with the truth that I had been denying my whole life, was that my mother did not love me and she was in fact my enemy. And she was the enemy of her other children too. And as difficult as that was, being able to finally see that there was a logic of some sort to this irrational behavior was an enormous relief. But I very quickly saw that these kinds of behaviors, the manipulation, the false mask of the faux wounded bird, you know, the people who are out there all the time claiming, you know, talking about their trauma and excusing all their bad behavior by saying I was triggered, that all of this stuff was cluster B personality type behavior, and it had been, it's infected the left, and it's become normalized on the left. And you see it in, you see it in this weird recent cultural idea that everybody else's pain and level of offense is your responsibility. You know, I call it a quasi-therapeutic stance that we're asked to take toward other people. Don't say anything that's offensive. Don't tell the truth if true words are going to make somebody upset. Don't trigger them. You know, ask them what you can do. The trans thing is the is immediately what comes to mind because it was it's the most brazen inversion of reality I've ever seen. It's literally psychopathic. That ideology, the hardcore activism, is literally psychopathic. It's a false world. It's a false mask. It's a false self. And it may indeed, for many of these people, come out of traumatic backgrounds. But that doesn't change the fact that they are asking us to participate in a false reality. They're asking us to call black white. They're asking us to say that water isn't wet and gravity isn't real.
So here's a quick example of that. That there's a writer in the UK who has a book out who has argued that the sex categories male and female did not exist, and that biological sex did not exist until humans invented it. To which I would respond, how did Tyrannosaurus rexes have babies?
Bigot.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you hate Tyrannosaurus?
Yeah. And, I mean, because we haven't yet named it doesn't mean it didn't exist. Gravity existed before we named it. And so my point really is one more step, which is, so, and I don't want to get into the whole big Facebook thing, but I posted this on Facebook just saying this is moronic.
Yeah.
And my real point is that there was a person who just responded a little while ago saying, okay, I can't believe how bigoted you are for saying this. And B, I would like to have an argument about this in good faith. And my point is that this is classic, that in two sentences, A, they accuse me of being a bigot, and B, then saying they want to argue in good faith. And you can't actually start your argument by calling someone a bigot and then say you're arguing in good faith.
That's
exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, and it's not.
And we see all the time. Is the point? The point is not this guy.
Oh no, you see it every single day. And in fact, I mean, you know, let's call things what they are. He's lying to you. He does not intend to engage in good faith, and none of these people who claim that intend to engage in good faith. What they want you to do is say the words and say the catechism. This is not about trans. It's not about feeding impoverished children. It's not about women's rights. Whatever it is that these kinds of people claim they want to persuade you about, that's a lie. What they want is control. They want control, and they want obedience, and they want performative obedience. It is not enough that you shut up when they tell you to shut up. What they want you to do is do it in front of other people. They want other people to have to see you speak the lie. And, you know, this whole nonsense, I mean, you know what this is, and I'm sure people listening to you know what this is, but this whole sort of, well, sex didn't exist until we came up with that word in the 19th century or whatever. This all comes back to, you know, the scourge that is continental European postmodern bullshit that took over the academy and the left starting in the 60s. But I don't think it's enough to call it just postmodern philosophy. What is it underneath? It's just good old-fashioned solipsism, isn't it? Right? Yeah. This didn't exist unless I was there to see it. It didn't exist unless they used the word that I came up with. It is so incredibly – it is the very definition of complete intellectual narcissism.
You know, there's another example of that I saw just yesterday was someone arguing that wind is not part of material reality because you can't see it. And
is that like how I can't see my cat when she sticks her head under the covers because she can't see me?
How do sailboats work? I mean, it's momentum.
I don't know, Derek. Do they work, though? How do you know if they work if you can't see it?
Well, that's exactly it. I'm being a bigot for thinking that the wind actually pushes a sailboat when it's not part of it. Okay, let's back up. There's two questions I want to ask here. One is, can you define the cluster B a little bit more? Like, there's a line I've heard about borderlines, which is the phrase, I hate you, don't leave me.
Yes.
And so can you talk a little bit about that? And then the other thing I would like for you to address before we come back to problems with how this has taken over society is a criticism that I have gotten a fair amount is that I don't actually dislike the culture because it's killing the planet. Instead, because my father was abusive, I see abuse everywhere.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I would like for you to first talk a little bit more about Cluster B. And then second, I would like for you to respond to the idea that this isn't actually a problem in the left. You're just mad at mom.
Ah, yeah, mommy issues. Yep.
Okay, so go.
Okay, so I'll go. And this is the part that is going to piss off some of your radical feminist listeners. So we may as well just be candid about that. There is a strain in radical feminist thought that cluster B personality disorders, and particularly borderline, don't actually exist, and that it's just a male narcissist misogyny expressing itself. I get this all the time. These are the kind of people who say he just has mommy issues. But I would point out that if a woman were describing the kind of abuse that she suffered at the hands of her father that mirrored the abuse that I suffered from my mother, these same women would be comforting her for her trauma. They would be understanding and forbearing on almost any outrageous behavior she took as a result of that. I have seen people like this. I still see it. I saw it yesterday. I've seen it on your threads. It's not your responsibility, but we see some of the same people. These are people who literally excuse women for florid abuse of their children by saying, but she's traumatized. So, Cluster B.
That's actually a really good example of that politically. The woman who just got executed,
Lisa, a week ago,
she tortured and killed a woman and cut her baby.
She cut the baby out of the woman's womb.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a monstrous crime. It's the kind of crime that you think only happens in movies.
And there were some people who were saying, well, she was traumatized, which, yeah, she was. And that's horrible.
Yeah, but that baby was, too.
Yeah, well, exactly. But my sympathy for people who were abused stops as soon as they become abusers.
That's my line, too. That's my line, too. So Cluster B is a term from the American Diagnostic System. It's used in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. There are three clusters, clusters A, B, and C. They each have their own personality disorders. I am talking about cluster B. These are called the dramatic and erratic personality disorders. There are four of them: borderline, histrionic, narcissistic, and antisocial. And antisocial is what people already know as either sociopathic or psychopathic. Same thing. Why are they all in the same cluster? Because they are all personality disorders. Another term for this is character disorders. So yes, we are indeed talking about problems with people's character. They are characterized. They all share in some way a lack of empathy, a lack of ability to imagine the legitimate subjective needs and feelings of other people and to act in a way that indicates that you understand that your conversational partner's needs are at least as important as yours. They all share narcissism. Even though only one of them has the name narcissistic personality disorder, they all share a fundamental narcissism. They're not all the same. Antisocial and sociopathic is probably the extreme end of the cluster. You know, these are people who are, you know, very often fit the profile of criminals. And if they're not actually physically violent, they're people who manipulate and exploit other people. They embezzle from companies, you know, that stock games, that sort of thing. And they are what you might think of as high conflict people. There's always a problem. And with these people, the problem is never them. It's always somebody else.
Which, by the way, years ago, 15 years ago, I became friends with someone who was a self-described sociopath. And the interesting thing, I didn't know the things you're talking about now, except what I discovered is that within weeks, everyone who contacted him or everyone who had any contact with him was fighting with other people who had contact with him.
Yep.
We were all picking fights with each other. My mom was in contact with him, and we ended up fighting all the time. And other people. It was so interesting to see how everybody, I see the pattern pretty quickly that everybody's getting in fights, even though he was not specifically you couldn't blame him for any one of them itself.
Oh, I know. And he sounds like he was a very clever one. This is called triangulation. It's when a narcissist or sociopath, a borderline or histrionic, manipulates other people and sets up a situation in which they can foment conflict because they thrive on conflict. There's a phrase that a guy who runs a place called the High Conflict Institute uses. The issue with these people is never the issue. And that is, like I said earlier, it's not actually about their pet cause. Their actual goal is to foment conflict for what's called narcissistic supply. They get off on seeing other people suffer, and they get off on seeing other people dancing to their tune. So I often use the analogy of the abusive family, and I say the society that we're living in now, and this goes to the accusation of, oh, well, he just has mommy issues or she just has daddy issues. Well, first of all, yes, as a matter of fact, I do have mommy issues, very big ones. When you're raised by a woman who is best described as Joan Crawford in a trailer park, you don't get out of that without having some issues. And some of those issues distort and warp your own emotional reactions. I am guilty of my own bad behavior. Some of that rubbed off on me. But it's not that we as a society, this is a societal scale model of what happens in the abusive family. So we know the dynamic where the parent is a narcissist or a borderline or whatever they are, and the children are always at war with each other. There might be one kid who's a scapegoat. There might be another kid who's called the golden child. The children often snipe at each other so that they stay in mommy or daddy's good graces. And this is the same thing out in society, right? The idea, this should not be difficult for people to wrap their minds around, because where do we think that we get our socialization from? Where do we think things like fascism, sociopathic politicians, where do we believe that started? It starts in the home. And if you're raised in a deranged home, where you are either physically abused, emotionally abused, where you are gaslit by your parents constantly, where they're trying to make a fake reality and have you agree and repeat the lie, then you internalize these things and you bring them out into the world. And that's exactly what we see. So, you know, and unfortunately, people ask me, why are you talking about this on the left? Why don't you talk about it on the right? Well, for a couple of reasons. One, I come from the left. And I'm one of those people who's more afraid of the stalker that's calling from inside the house than the one I can see coming outside. And I think we often, all of us humans, often misinterpret who our real enemies are. And we refuse to believe that it could be our family or the man that we're sleeping with, or our supposed best friend. It's much easier to believe that there's a malevolent force outside. And so we blind ourselves and we lie to ourselves. And we've done that particularly on the left. The left does not want to deal with this reality. And they want to point to, I mean, I think in some ways a lot of people on the left need the stereotype of an unreconstructed far-right Christian bigot in order to define themselves. You know, I'm gay and I've been out since 1986 when I was 12 years old. And I can tell you confidently that, at least in my experience, I haven't dealt with anything that I would call flagrant homophobia that was any real threat to my person or my position in society in at least 25 years. Things have changed enormously for the better for gay people. And yet I still see so many gay men histrionically screaming, frankly, about how horrible homophobia is and how oppressed gay men are. And I just look around and I'm like, unless you're living in Butcher's Holler, you know, and even there, I mean, when I began to see all this happening on the left, I started to develop relationships and friendships with conservatives and religious people, which I had never done before because I was operating on stereotypes and my own bigotry, thinking, well, they all hate me, right? They all hate me because I'm gay and they hate other people and they want to starve babies. I mean, just really ridiculous things. And when I look now, sure, there's wacko right-wing people. These problems in these character disorders, they're not partisan disorders, right? I think it just happens that right now in our particular epoch, this is a big problem on the left. It hasn't always been a big problem on the left, and it might become a big problem on the right again. But right now, I think it's on the left.
So I just want to put in one thing real quick, which is I was listening to this guy a couple, three, maybe 6 months ago, was talking about how there are always – basically the same number of sociopaths in society, and they will be, you know, there'll be sociopaths in the KKK and there'll be sociopaths in a stamp club, you know, they'll be wherever they are. Uh-huh. And he said, why is it that sometimes there would be eruptions of KKK violence? And he was talking about Antifa and BLM, by the way.
Yeah.
He said, why would there be?
And those are sociopathically organized organizations. Yes.
Well, we'll which just is going to get a shot to say that. But anyway, he said that there is always the same number of sociopaths in the KKK, and there would be eruptions of KKK violence because at some point those sociopaths are given social permission mm-hmm. to enact their sociopathy. Mm-hmm. And so if they recognize that there will be severe consequences for their sociopathic actions, the KKK violence is somewhat reduced. But when they feel they can act with impunity, then they're going to do sociopaths going to sociopath.
That's right.
And this
that's
is true right. No matter whether we're talking about – it doesn't matter at all. We could be talking rock stars who can act with impunity because they're famous. We can be talking politicians.
Yeah, well, a lot of famous people are cluster Bs too. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, so it's just I wanted to throw in that thing about when they're allowed to – when they're given social reinforcement for their behavior, it's going to come out.
Yes, I think he's I think he's absolutely right. I don't know if he's right that there's always the same number of sociopaths. And one of the things I'd like to do is – or cluster Bs, and I want to make a couple of points here. It's not just the psychopaths, okay, folks? They are not the only danger. You have not gotten yourself into the clear if you've avoided the full-on sociopaths. Stop believing that. They are not the only dangerous character disordered people. Borderlines, histrionics, and narcissists are also dangerous in their own ways. They're not all as dangerous. It's true. And of the cluster B personality disorders, borderline, which itself is a hell of a thing to experience both for the person and for everybody around them. It is not benign. You need to understand this. If a person can be said to be – if a person has enough of the traits and has enough of a pattern that we could reasonably say their cluster B disordered, it's already severe. There is no such thing as a mild cluster B personality disorder, okay? It's already over the line. But it is true that if they get the right therapy and they are willing to examine the trauma that helped get them where they are, that people with borderline personality disorder, and I've changed my mind over the last 4 years about this, I now believe it is true that they can overcome this. But what is also true is that most mental health clinicians are not trained in this. They don't know the right therapies. They approach all their clients as if they were normal range personalities, and that can in fact make a cluster B worse. And most people, including the borderline, sadly, are not going to recover from this because one of the perverse aspects of this, of having a cluster B personality disorder is that you are very unlikely to be able to accept and believe that something is wrong with you. So the condition itself makes you convinced that there's nothing wrong with you. It's the rest of the world that's fucked up. So that's why it is so difficult for these people to make change. I don't know if it's true that there's always the same number of sociopaths. In fact, I don't think that's true. There's actually literature, and I talked about this on the most recent episode of my podcast that's out today. There is some indication that the number of cluster B personality disorders in the United States has gone off the charts over the past 20 to 30 years.
Well, I would actually agree with that for a couple of reasons. One of them is there was a study done of narcissism in general, mm-hmm. and or no, it was of empathy, but they studied college students from 1980 to 2011.
Yep.
And they studied their empathy by asking questions like, if you have two sandwiches for lunch and your friend is sitting across the table and has none, do you give them one of your sandwiches? And empathy has, according to their questions, empathy has gone down by like 50% in one generation, which is horrifying.
I absolutely believe it.
And so that's one thing. And the other thing is, of course, you can end up with more trauma and more sociopaths in certain circumstances, because trauma breeds trauma and sociopathy breeds sociopathy. Yep. So you can't tell me that you didn't have a whole bunch more sociopaths emerge from the horrors of World War II.
Absolutely.
Than you would from other circumstances.
I'm not an expert on this, but I've talked to people. I've talked to friends who've actually studied this, and there's more literature I need to read. But there's a good argument that seems plausible to me so far that the trauma from World War II did have something to do with this. Maybe not in the direct way that people think, you know, because, you know, not everybody in the United States went to war. Most of us stayed home, right? It's not only war itself. It's not only being on the battlefield that is traumatic. It's all the knock-on effects. But I think that the post-war consumer boom, the economic prosperity of the 1950s, people forget this. They forget it today. The level of material comfort and the relative wealth of the average person in the 1950s was unlike anything seen before in human history. The way we live today, even people that we call on the poverty line have access to comfort, safety, food, and luxury that was available only to royalty 100 years ago. And too much comfort can spoil people, and too much emphasis on the self and materialism, these values get passed along, and the generations turn over and turn over. And, you know, the generation who raised the millennials and those afterwards, you know, you can see this progression happening. This the helicopter parenting, I mean, both extreme mistreatment, abuse, actual florid abuse can curdle a child's character, but so can spoiling them. So can putting them on a pedestal. So can running in and kissing their boo-boo before it even bleeds every single time, and then sending them off to college. And when they don't get an A in their class, mommy or daddy is on the phone bawling out the teacher. This behavior is rewarded. This is why you see—
Which, by the way, I know somebody who works at a university who's told me that that actually happens.
I know it happens because I have friends who are academics. The academy is— – I went to Sarah Lawrence College from 1995 to 99. That's where I got my undergraduate degree. I would not set foot on that campus for love nor money. I will have nothing to do with it. They're not getting a penny of my money because, like all of the other liberal arts colleges, they have fallen for this woke, and they are part of what's wrong in the world.
Okay, so can we now go explicitly to— – how is the left manifesting these cluster B symptoms? Can you go through the symptoms and show how they're being manifested, or can you do something—
Sure.
—to just make it clear?
Sure. Well, I'll give you, let's see, what would be a good example? This, particularly on the left, I mentioned this term before, the wounded bird camouflage. Not everybody is Dexter, right? Don't expect all sociopaths to be cold and calculating and all that sort of stuff. There's all sorts of different ways that personality disorder people can manipulate and present. And one of the very popular ways on the left right now is for anybody who has any claim to what might be called a minority status, whether they're women, gay, black, Latino, whoever they are. If you are a minority, you are assumed that your life was full of trauma, and so full of trauma that anything you do afterwards, any behavior that you engage in afterwards, is justified, and you're getting yours back. So as an example, you see, look at the people online who are constantly bigging themselves up about how spiritual and enlightened they are and how much they want to help other people connect and find their true joy and this, that, and the other thing. They tend to be often very weepy. They tend to be self-aggrandizing. They humble brag, right? This is a particularly borderline trait. They humble brag. And then they develop a following and they get people hooked into them. And then they start doing things like, oh my God, I can't pay my rent this month. And they get people to sympathize with them and say, oh, you poor baby, while they pit other people against each other. And they put on the wounded bird camouflage. They try very hard to make themselves look traumatized and fragile and innocent. And they don't have a mean bone in their body. But as soon as you don't toe the line, as soon as you don't, quote, validate them, they start smearing you to your friends. They might write a tearful soliloquy online about how, you know, they couldn't believe that they were so deeply betrayed by so-and-so and so-and-so. You see this all the time with trans activists and their supporters, not just the lobbyists and the trans people themselves, but their coterie, and I'm sorry, of 90% young women. Falling for this bullshit and enforcing it on their behalf. I talked about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this week. Perfect example of a pattern of histrionic behavior. What do I mean by histrionics? I mean melodramatics. She's constantly histrionic and she has a huge following for it. Everybody claps and says, yes, queen, work, right? And this past week, when the GameStop story came out where investors were buying up stock in GameStop, and then the institutional investors, the hedge fund guys, got pissed off and some trading firms put caps on it. I don't understand the economic ins and outs of this, but Cortez went on Twitter and said something very reasonable. And she said, you know, this sounds to me like illegal behavior. It sounds like double dealing. And I would support a hearing on these practices if necessary. And I agree with her. Very reasonable. Well, apparently Ted Cruz did as well. And he tweeted back to her and said, all he said was agreed, or it was one, two or three words, fully agreed, I think he said. And Cortez comes back and says, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can easily find the tweet. She says, I'm willing to work with anybody on the GOP side who agrees about this problem, but you just tried to get me murdered 3 weeks ago, Ted. So you can sit this one out. And if you really want to help, you can resign.
What?
You just tried to have me murdered 3 weeks ago, Ted, is what she said. That is, it's deranged. It's outrageous.
Well, and it's also, I don't know how many people in the audience have experienced this, but this is what you just said is so typical of my experience with the left these days.
Yes, 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 absolutely. This is the left. Look at them. You know, we're not making it up, Derek. All you have to do is go on Twitter. Look at Twitter. Look at the New York Times' official account. Look at the reporters for the New York Times, for CNN. It is constant histrionics. It's drama queen theatrics. It's editorializing. It's every single thing that happens to a racial minority is obviously the result of institutional racism. Every time a man disagrees with a woman, he's a misogynist. Every time somebody doesn't take somebody's emotional incontinence seriously, they're wounding them. I mean, look at people are saying that refusing to call men women is literal violence, and they use the phrase literal violence. Violence itself isn't violence. I mean, look, Antifa can get away with it. Black Lives Matter can burn things down across the country. And nobody on the left was calling for them to be shut down. They were applauding them. They were applauding them. And if anybody here is listening and is getting angry about that and says, well, I wasn't applauding them, well, I'd like to ask you this. You were sitting on your hands, though, weren't you? You weren't saying anything against it because that's your tribe, right? I used to be that person. I know what this is about.
I think a lot of us are also don't speak out because we have seen what happens to those who do. The image I keep thinking about is the roving eye of Sauron, mm-hmm. and you don't want it to fall on you, so you keep your head down and let someone else put their head up above the parapet because you want them to get shot, not you.
Yeah, well, guess what? That might work for a while, but Sauron is coming for you too. You are going to go to the guillotine. Robespierre did. This is not going to stop. You cannot stop a bully, and you cannot stop a seriously personality disordered person or social system from targeting you by keeping your head down. I realize how dangerous this is. People are losing their jobs. That's real. I know that they're fearful. I'm taking a risk right now doing this show and then talking to you under my real name. I work for a nonprofit that has nothing to do with any of these issues. It's about consumer protection. I fully expect that there's going to be a woke mob at some point that wants to have my head for this. We have got to be braver, okay? I had to put my mother out of my life, okay? I had to actually take her to court and evict her, because if I didn't, she would have bankrupted me. And if I had not taken control of the situation and set a firm boundary and said, no more, you are not in my life anymore, my mental health would have continued to decline and I would have allowed her antics to ruin me. This is going to happen. We have got to be braver. More of us are going to have to take chances.
Well, thank you for that. And so central to all of my analysis and all of my books is a line that I absolutely love by R.D. Lang, which was, you can't plug a void plugging a void. And what I take that to mean is that that's the same thing that you were saying earlier about the issue was not the issue, in that if a cluster B gets mad at you because of something you did, chances are really good it's not actually because of something you did or didn't do. Instead, it's here's an example. The person's not a cluster B, but decades ago, I dated someone who was really jealous. And we were at Olive Garden, and I made eye contact with the waitress. And then after dinner, she yelled at me for a couple hours about how I had humiliated her in public. And I didn't flirt with the waitress. I just made eye contact when I'm ordering my seafood linguine. Mm-hmm. And the issue was not, in fact, whether I made eye contact with the waitress. The issue was her issues. And in fact, it was not be satisfied by me no longer making eye contact with servers.
That's right.
Restaurants. Because that's
that wasn't
not the issue.
I'm glad you said that, because I want to clarify this too, and I know we're coming up on time. I don't propose that most people on the left are personality disordered. I don't even propose that most people are personality disordered, because that isn't true. Most people are not. But what you've got to understand, when cluster B dynamics are in vogue as they are right now, it only takes one or two charismatic people with this kind of character disorder to get everybody else to start engaging in abuse tactics. Just like brothers and sisters fight with each other to stay in dad's good graces, we are doing the same thing. So all these behaviors, that the jealousy that you described in the woman that you were dating, the histrionic overreactions to things, these are not just personality disorder behaviors. They're human behaviors. What makes this into a disorder is the severity and the frequency and the pattern. But all of us at one time in our lives are going to experience and do some of these bad things. That's just human. But we need to start remembering that there's a difference between you and me, and other people matter, right? And you're right that they're not, you cannot make eye contact with waitresses for the rest of your life. But that underlying problem that was causing the tension between you and the woman you were dating, you're correct, wasn't really about that. It was about something else. And it's not going to be solved by compliance.
Well, and yes, thank you for that. And there are issues. Okay, something I've noticed that and I hate the way this word has been co-opted, because I think it's a useful word, but it's not any longer, is I went through trauma as a child, and there are certain things that would trigger me.
Yeah. Yep.
And again, I hate the fact that at universities, you can be triggered by somebody coming in to give a talk that you disagree with. That's just crap. But anyway, I had one of the triggers was that because of the abuse, I couldn't date anybody who drinks alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I could go on a perfectly delightful first date, and we're just having a nice conversation, and she orders a glass of wine at dinner. And Then all of a sudden, you know, the only thing I remember from that date is the glass of wine.
Yeah, because you were emotionally activated.
Yeah, and so my point is, I'm agreeing with you that we all do this, but the question is whether we destroy other people's lives because of it.
Exactly. And you know, if anybody's interested in more of this, it's funny, Derek, it's almost like you're on my same wavelength, because the episode that I just put out of Disaffected Today talks about this in detail. I said the exact same thing about the word trigger. And I used an example of one of my own triggers, an actual trigger that I actually figured out where it came from in my childhood and how it had distorted the way I was responding to other people. And I talk about these things very openly, because I don't know a better way to get people to understand these human dynamics, but how they become abuse dynamics. And I think there's value in understanding our weaknesses and where they come from, and being able to admit that sometimes our thinking is really distorted. It can not only help us to better understand ourselves and to better govern ourselves, but it will also help us to be able to make better decisions about other people. You know, if I could give people one piece of advice that would actually stand them in good stead, if you could just do this one thing, it's not just one thing. It's not really small. Look at the pattern of behavior. If there's somebody in your life who does this sort of stuff constantly, and you've been papering it over, you've been making excuses for it, notice the pattern. If this is a pattern of behavior, you know, you may be looking at a personality disorder here. And if that's the case, nothing you do is going to change them. So you're going to have to make decisions, and we can make better decisions about who to open ourselves up to and be vulnerable to, and who to close down in front of and put a wall between us, if we pay attention to this.
So I think that would be a delightful place to end, but I'm not going to end there. and I think what you said is really great. I want to come back to the larger social scale, and what you said about it just takes a few charismatic ones. And I have a friend who teaches at a university who there were a few very vociferous SJW students who started accusing everybody who wouldn't be subservient to them of racism and ableism and all sorts of other things. And they got a couple of allies on among the faculty, and they have basically destroyed the entire department. And now everybody in the entire department has to be subservient to these students who are making death threats against professors. They are doing all sorts of just crazy stuff. And I just keep thinking, back when I was in college, and sorry to sound so old and such an old fogey, but back when I was in college, if I would have gone to the department head and demanded that a certain professor be fired, they would have laughed me out of the office.
Of course they would have. And that's what they should be doing now. I don't need to know anything more about the people you're describing. I don't need to observe them. I don't need to see them in a clinical context. I don't need to know them over time and see how they are. That's cluster B. There are leading indicators, and that's one of them. Death threats, ruining an entire department, that is cluster B. This is a severe character disorder. These are abusive people. They are Machiavellian. They are sadistic, and they enjoy your suffering. Get this through your heads, everybody. These people are not having a bad day. They're not misguided. Their heart is not in the right place. They mean to hurt you because they like it.
So what do I know? This is crazy to try to end on this after all this analysis, but so what do we do? What do those of us who care about real social justice, not SJWs, what are those of us who care about fairness, equality, whatever words we want to use, what do we do to stop the train wreck that has become the left, to recapture the left, to how do we stop the madness?
First think things through. Think things through. Does the claim actually make sense? Don't allow your emotions to be easily triggered by signals and proxies, right? People put out signals all the time, signals that I'm vulnerable, I'm traumatized, or I'm disabled, and you have to alter your speech around me. Stop being led around by basically branding, personal branding, right? Actually think through what they're saying. Are they actually oppressed? Were they actually mistreated? Does this seem reasonable to you? If you can sit there in a room and all by yourself so that you're not worried that other people are monitoring your emotional reaction and whether or not you're signaling fealty, because we censor ourselves because of that. Think it through. If it doesn't make sense to you and you seem – if you feel like you're walking on eggshells around somebody all the time, that's a very good indication that you're in a personality disorder dynamic. So think things through. Remember that you have a brain and you're allowed to use it. And after you've thought these things through and you've been able to sort the from the legitimate claims, stop being a patsy. Stop sitting there silently. You know, say something about it. Yeah, I'm asking you to take a risk. And for God's sake, stop letting your friends be targeted by these people while you sit there and do nothing. I mean, if I could tell you how many people, when I first started talking about this on social media 4 or 5 years ago, I lost about 75% of my online friends, some of them I'd had for years. And I had people who called themselves my friends sending me private messages. I really, really agree with you. I'm so glad you're saying this, but I just can't say anything about it. You don't let your friends take the heat. People like you, Derek, people like me, other people who are willing to speak out about this. Not everybody has the same temperament. I am willing to take some risks that maybe the average person isn't. My personality is suited for it. But that doesn't mean that it's okay to let people like you or me or Lierre or anybody else take all the heat for this. We have feelings too. We have jobs too. We have families too. We can't take all of it for you. If you don't stand up and say, I too think this is wrong and I think we need to step back, we're never going to get out of it.
Well, thank you for that. And we're running out of time. Do you have any last words besides those? Because that's great.
Subscribe to my show.
Oh, okay. So how do they do that?
We're pretty much everywhere, although we're in the beginning. But iTunes, Spotify, Rumble, YouTube. I fully expect that at some point places like YouTube are either going to demonetize me or kick me off the platform. But get it while you can. But if this is interesting to you and if you disagree, you know, we're going to be starting to take in phone calls and correspondence and actually have debates, you know. But if this is important to you, please take a listen to my show, because while there are a lot of shows out there right now that are talking about what's wrong with the left and disaffected liberals like me, I don't know of another show that's actually looking at the psychological underpinnings that come out of abuse dynamics and trauma in the home. And I think that's something important to talk about. So thank you for having me.
And the show is called Disaffected.
Yep.
And we'll spell it just to be sure. Spell it, please.
D-I-S-A-F-F-E-C-T-E-D. Disaffected.
Well, thank you so much for all of that, Josh. And thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Josh Slocum. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you.